Do you enjoy pain?
Film.
Don't hurt.
Excelsior, true believers, and welcome to episode 3 of the Film Don't Hurt podcast. I am one of your hosts, Kai Parker, co-founder of Menola Films and host of the MILFcast, the Menola Films podcast.
And I'm the true believer himself. Isn't that the name of a movie?
Yes, it is.
Yes, and it's the name of a movie. My name's Dylan Fields. I'm also a co-founder of Menola Films. I on the side, host a little thing called the LAMcast.
I like that you sent me a text saying, are you recording, right when we figured out we weren't recording? Like, I'm going to look down in the middle of that positive intro that I had going. All right, so what? So here's the thing. We've been trying to come up with topics every week. Not trying. We've got several of them, but we've been kind of switch hitting on this. Not in the gay way. Although,
really,
some of you would
really
believe we might.
Really perpetuating that.
Yeah. So it was my turn this week, and my idea essentially is, you know, Dylan and I wanted to have a conversational podcast where we could also get into a little more personal talk. This one's probably going to be extremely personal for me, and I hope to delve a little bit into Dylan's life. But I wanted to talk about this kind of phenomenon that has become geek culture. Is it geek? I don't even know. Is it geek culture or is it nerd culture?
Yes. I think it's both. It's interchangeable.
Well,
I'm not well-versed enough to know the difference anymore, perhaps.
What is your differentiation in your head of nerd and geek?
I don't think there is one.
You don't?
They're thrown around interchangeably.
They are these days, but go back to grade school. I mean, was there a differentiation for you there? Like,
there's
I always,
a differentiation between like those two and dweeb or Poindexter, I feel like.
Yeah.
Geek. Geek. I think math geek. I think... No, I don't know.
See, for me, nerd always struck me as, like the kids that we made fun of for, like, being smart in school. Geeks always struck me as the socially awkward kids. Maybe the kids that had mental problems. Maybe the kids that dressed different. Maybe the kids that acted out.
But see, they're not mutually exclusive, which is a problem.
They're not. I'm just kind of trying to put it into place in your head. I do think that is an important place to start, though, because I feel like it's... I don't feel like it's nerd culture. I think maybe at one point it was. Now I feel like it's more than geek culture, and maybe that's only important to me. I don't know.
Well, you've got comic book geeks.
Uh-huh.
Like the guys on Big Bang Theory. Geeks or nerds?
Nerds.
Yeah.
And yet
they're also kind of geeks, aren't they? I don't watch the show.
Yeah, to a certain extent. They're almost like a crossover.
Right.
It's not a bad show. My dad, I don't particularly like my father. But one of the greatest things he ever taught me is one time in school, somebody was picking on me, called me a geek. And he took me aside and he said, do you know what a geek is? Do you know what a geek is in actuality?
Oh, I forgot. No.
He took me over a dictionary and showed me, and it's someone who bites the heads off live chickens, like a sideshow freak,
okay.
Basically.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
So Ozzy Osbourne's a fucking geek.
Ted Nugent's probably a geek.
Yeah, exactly.
I know how to gleek. Wait, sorry. Wrong
oh,
podcast.
Wow, that made its way to Arizona. I thought maybe that was just a California thing. Do you know how to limpy?
I did grow up in California, don't forget.
Oh, that's true, huh? Do you know how to limpy?
I don't. I don't know what that is.
Ooh, I'll have to teach you about that sometime.
What is
All
it?
Right. It's sort of a way where you take your fourth finger and you get it really limp and you start whacking, like moving it around like a chainsaw, and then you just flick somebody like you're hitting them with a wet towel and you inflict pain on them. It's called a limpy.
Okay.
I assume because your finger is limp.
I did the math there.
Yeah.
I'm enough of a geek or nerd to figure that out.
Anyway, the whole reason I wanted to talk about this whole, let's call it geek culture thing, was because, one, it partially to do with my children. Maybe that'll come up later. But essentially, Comic-Con just kind of came and went. Sadly, I was not there. Comic-Con has kind of fucked themselves in the ass. And made a lot of people not like them by the way they've started doing things there.
By becoming too big?
Yeah, I feel like it's already been big, but now they're perpetuating it by this new way of how they're doing their tickets. And, you know, make a long story short, I went online to get tickets, and we were in the room at the time you're supposed to be, got in the waiting room to get tickets on their new system. The system crashed. Everybody that was in on time got frozen out, and the people that were behind us in line all got tickets. And this happened to thousands of people and irritated a lot of people like me who have been going for a long time. The question that kind of perplexed me the other day was, I'm starting to wonder if I'm even a geek. And it's kind of interesting because I feel like I'm going to have to throw the geek card on the table at some point. And I know it's not important to you whatsoever. But I am curious with you, what is your... Do you have a background in sort of this geeky stuff? Because I, quite honestly, I grew up a fan of comics, but I also collected baseball cards. I played sports. I was popular in school. I mean, I think it's important to let this out there because I think people know that we do podcasts and have a movie website, and they just assume we live in our mom's basement and we're fucking dorks. But I know you, and outside of the fact that you have a movie website, you're not a geeky dude. In fact, if anyone were going to your house, I think they would assume you were a movie fan or a music fan, if anything. Like, you go in your house, you don't have one thing on your wall that screams, I love movies. Your DVDs are hidden.
Yeah.
If anything, you've got a couple records frame, you have a nice CD collection, I would assume you're a music connoisseur.
If you had come to my house or my parents' house, depending on how far back you go, you would have seen that stuff. I used to have movie posters up. I still have.
What were the last posters you could remember hanging in your room?
Out of Sight, Get Shorty, Pulp Fiction. You know, it was those.
Okay.
Run Lola Run. Yeah. We're talking late 90s.
Okay.
I don't think I've displayed posters since then. I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but that has to do more with marriage, I think, for me. Now, your wife is welcoming of it, I think likes it, has maybe appropriated it somewhat.
She's worked it into her style. I mean, the difference between Dylan and I is you go in his house, he's got a very nice home, a couple records on the wall, but it's just a nice home. You come into my house, you see 8 movie posters and some Star Wars art prints that Dylan bought for us. Thank you, by the way, over the fireplace. A Han Solo statue. I mean, and my house is very cute. My wife has designed it nicely, but she incorporates all that stuff in.
Yeah. And we don't do that.
Yeah,
though, I've never had the propensity that you do. I would, like, it's funny. This is really kind of offhanded, but you've got Entertainment Weekly covers framed on your wall. And I would never do that, but it really has less to do with the geek stuff than it does that I just think Entertainment Weekly has shitty covers, by and large.
But, like, honestly, the ones I have are amazing. Like, I've got the one after Heath Ledger.
I don't think they have any amazing covers anymore. You know, something like Premiere Magazine used to have more artful covers. Entertainment Weekly covers are always, every week in and week out, the most boring fucking shit you can imagine. They just grab people and throw them in front of a white background, and then they throw some words on the cover. I hate their covers. They have no art to them. So.
I will say that they lend themselves to be framed in the particular, you know, the matting and frame you can buy at the store.
Yeah.
And that was kind of why we leaned toward it. Like, we have some great magazines. Like, I have some, I have the Fight Club Premiere Magazine. I have the Girls of Sin City Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
I've got some really cool mags, and unfortunately, Entertainment Weekly is kind of the one I went with. But, you know, it is what it is. But, I mean, okay, so
if we had a bigger house and, like, I had the man room where I put my pool table, there would be framed movie posters up in it.
Would that be the extent of it?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
I mean, I used to be the kind that would like to display my DVDs or something like that. Mm. And, you know, you've seen my house. I built a bookshelf with my dad that houses all my CDs, and I still buy CDs probably largely because of that. It's like, no, I can't put them all in a trunk somewhere. I've got 700 or something. They need to be shown. Though, you know, that's really outdated at this point. DVDs, they come in all different sizes and box sets and whatever, and, you know, I just didn't have a good place for them. So, yeah, we
well, yeah, and we now with the advent of Blu-ray, if anything, Blu-ray is a dead technology, but it lends itself to a nice shelf. Like, they're all one size.
Yeah, but you got to put it, what, you're going to put them next to your DVDs? And then you got, oh, they're different sizes.
Yeah, it's a whole nother issue. I used to actually color code mine. I would do mine by the color of the spine.
Yeah.
And then they would actually fade like a rainbow, like from dark yellow to light yellow into orange, stuff like that. You know what I mean?
How would you find anything ever?
I could always remember the color on the spine. That's okay. How I would find it. And you couldn't do it alphabetized because it looked like shit. It drove me crazy. But that's how I did it.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit of a sidetrack. But, like, what about you? And you're growing up, what about comic books? Was that a thing for you?
I collected G.I. Joe comic books for a couple years, and that was the extent of my comic reading and collecting.
Okay. What about, were you a baseball card guy?
I was a sports card guy. Probably for too long. But, you know, I think towards the end of it, or maybe towards the middle all the way through the end of it, it appealed more to my degenerate gambler side, because that's basically all it is.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I was not really a hoarder so much as I was trying to be a junior Wall Street investor type.
Like, what do you mean? By the collection value?
Well, yeah. I mean, trading cards in their heyday, this was, late 80s, early 90s, were gambling. They were legal gambling. They still are, probably, but I'm just not into it, you know. But, yeah, it's buy this lottery ticket, a.k.a. pack of cards, and you might get a winner. That's what it became. That's not what it was in the 60s and 70s, but that's what it became. And it just got worse and worse with more companies and more companies. So, yeah, I lost interest. But that was my thing for a long time. I did baseball, football, basketball, even hockey cards.
Yeah, guys weren't buying them for the gum anymore, essentially. Which is essentially what happened with the comic book thing, which was all these people in the 90s, you know, comic book stores started popping up because people saw that these things were worth money. Kind of when Image came around, Spawn, Jim Lee, Todd McFarlane. People saw that there was monetary value in it and started buying it up and said, oh, I'll buy this comic, and a day later it'll be worth $300.
Well, shit, didn't Todd McFarlane probably single-handedly perpetuate or create that market? I haven't heard so much lately about him, but, 10, 15 years ago, everything he put out was a collector's item because it was limited in quantity and high in demand.
It was the advent of Image Comics, which was essentially all these guys that had worked for Marvel and DC and kind of the big two kind of came together and made this company Image that involved Jim Lee, Todd McFarlane, and I want to say five other artists. And at the time, there wasn't really that much independent comics. I think Dark Horse was kind of the big one at the time. And these guys said, "Hey, we're gonna form a company, an umbrella company called Image, and we're gonna work underneath it. But everybody's gonna have their own company, and you're gonna keep all the profits of the stuff that you make." So McFarlane made Spawn, and Jim Lee went and made Wildcats, Gen 13, and all that. And under this company, they started selling these independent books that were rivaling the production and the sales value of the big guys like Captain America, who wasn't even big at the time, but like Spider-Man, these guys. Mm-hmm. And they were selling 2 million copies of every book. Like, they're saying nowadays, if you sell 30,000 copies, you would never get canceled. These guys were selling 1 million, and they were retaining all the rights, and it just kind of blew up. Now, McFarlane has kind of, like, found his own way with, like, toy making, right. And he does sports toys, too.
Yeah, that was a big part of what I know.
He's not doing bad, let's put it that way. But I was listening to, a podcast with Kevin Smith the other day, and he was talking about how back in the day it used to be embarrassing to go to the store and get comics. And I guess I missed that. And for me personally, I think it was because when I was growing up, I wanted to be a cartoonist. So for me, it was always like research, and I would buy comics and trace them and stuff. And it never affected me socially. So I was never embarrassed by it. But I did kind of grow up 10 years later to him a little more towards when comic book stores started to become more prevalent. I mean, these guys were getting everything off swivel racks and dark basement conventions and things like that.
Yeah.
So I missed that whole part where it was nerdy to collect comics, I suppose. But it certainly wasn't in the heyday of it all, which is what we've kind of gotten into now.
Yeah, now there's no shame in it. There might have still been a little shame even for you, but it would probably depend on which circles you were traveling with and whatnot. I mean, but the days of... I wouldn't want to say the days of comic book guy from The Simpsons are gone, because those people still exist, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But now it's almost like they, you know, they've attained a new level of geek status by being that way rather than being frowned upon sorely. And I don't know. Does it just have to do with money, and now they don't have to live in their mother's basements anymore, or what?
I don't know what it is, because part of this, the question of this, are you in a wind tunnel? What's going on with you?
Kind of, yes.
Part of this was, like, you know, my kids have kind of grown up in this era now where it's cool to be a nerd.
Yeah.
Like, they're doing the stuff that we did that was kind of punk rock, which was wearing, you know, clear lens sunglasses and these quirky t-shirts you would buy at thrift stores and stuff. Now they get them at stores, and this geek chic thing is kind of taken over where it's like cool to be a nerd. And it's almost, you know, 21 Jump Street I was watching the other day has kind of made fun of it, where they go back to school 10 years later and their nerdy kid is popular and the popular kid is unpopular because he's just a jock dumb fuck.
Right. They put their finger on that one pretty well.
Yeah. And it's kind of hilarious, but I mean, I'm kind of curious where that turn came from. I feel like this whole thing started with Spider-Man, the movie, which is kind of why I wanted to bring it up since this is a film podcast. But for me, it feels like it all started with Spider-Man. Is that wrong?
Why would it be Spider-Man and not X-Men?
I feel like, well...
Or even Batman.
No, because Batman, it had too much time to resonate. I feel like Batman was popular and it had a cult. It was a bit of a pop culture moment and a cultural phenomenon and everybody was into it. And maybe that's where we first show the signs of liking all that shit, but nothing caught on. None of that changed through the 90s. It wasn't until the early 2000s when all this stuff started to hit. And I feel like Blade was the groundwork to see if it was possible to do. X-Men was the first attempt at it where people went, oh shit. But it was Spider-Man that set everything off. Because it feels to me like we finally got to see Spider-Man fly through the sky in a believable manner. I mean, we can pick apart the CGI all we want, but we saw Spider-Man fly through the sky, and finally technology had caught up with what they wanted to do, and it did much better than X-Men. X-Men wasn't a huge hit, not the way Spider-Man was.
I think it was.
Well, do your little research there on your computer.
I'm
do you think it made
it.
As much? I want to say it made under 100 million.
Oh, no.
Opening weekend? No. Under 100 million.
Opening weekend? Of course, opening weekend. This was the year 2000.
Well, what did Spider-Man do the following year?
I don't know. Give me a moment, and I'll let you know. I was looking up also, I wanted to give the nod to X-Men based solely off of my belief that it was much newer than Spider-Man. Turns out that's not really the case. As a comic, I mean.
No, not even close.
I was under the impression that it didn't start until, like, the 80s.
But yeah, that was kind of like the revamp. Like, with like Jim Lee, one of the founders who started Image Comics, was one of the guys that wrote X-Men 1. But Uncanny X-Men goes back quite a way. X-Men goes back to the Stan Lee stable of characters.
Gotcha.
So they've been around for a while.
The first one had a $54 million opening and grossed $157 million total.
Is that impressive?
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Good. I don't think it's impressive.
You don't think it's impressive?
What would any comic book that comes out tomorrow, comic book movie, make?
You're talking 13 years ago, and you're talking about a different world. Okay, you mentioned Spawn. How much did Spawn make?
Well, Spawn made shit, but I'm talking about the mainstream.
Spawn made $54 million 2 years earlier. Three
really?
Years earlier.
That's actually very good.
Yeah. You what? Said it laid the groundwork, and Blade probably did even better than that.
I said Blade laid the groundwork, not Spawn.
Sorry. Blade made $70 million, came out a year after Spawn. So I think it's more of a progression. How about we just agree on that? You know, Batman probably laid the initial... I mean, you could say Superman did, but then Batman's a decade later. But the Batman films ran all through the 90s. Towards the end of the 90s comes Blade and Spawn. And I think X-Men was the first big hit. It might not be as big compared to what they're making these days, but $154 million for it in 2000 probably had it in the top 10, if not the top 5.
It might have been the top movie. I'm not saying that it wasn't. But if you're telling me Blade outdid it, what, 3 years earlier?
It didn't outdo X-Men.
I thought you said it did 70.
Yeah, total.
Oh, 70 total. Okay,
yes,
I thought
yes,
you meant
yes.
opening weekend.
No. the days of $100 million openings have only come with higher ticket prices and whatnot. I mean, that's a relatively new phenomenon.
Okay.
X-Men finished 8th in 2000.
Of the year?
Yes.
Okay. And Spider-Man, I'm guessing, probably came close to being a top film of the year.
Probably top three, yeah.
Okay. And it did $403 million domestic.
It was number one.
Yeah. So,
but Spider-Man also was a much bigger name than even X-Men.
Well, yeah, and that's what I'm saying. That's why I feel it was the kickoff point. It was the first of the big ones in this stream of this new comic book era, which started, granted, it started in that time, 2001, 2002, Spider-Man, X-Men. It's right there.
We're arguing.
But I feel like, yeah. I feel like Spider-Man's what set it over. I've also been one of these guys that has been going to Comic-Con since, I think I did my first Comic-Con in 2002. And I've been going since back in the days when you could just walk up and buy a ticket. And I have seen it progress to where you wait in 3-hour lines, to where you have to do these raffles online. I feel like it is a combination of the Comic-Con and Spider-Man and the movies that have followed that have kind of set this into motion. Would you agree with any of that?
Yeah, the movies play a much bigger role than anything else, for sure.
Well, the movies are what have completely distorted the con in general.
Yeah, all the old school con people are pissed at the movies for taking over Comic Con.
Yeah, because it's sad. When you used to come in, it was basically 3/4 of the floor was merchandise and artists, and a good 1/4 of it was comic books. Now the comic books are in a corner. The toys go for about 1/3, and you can find them throughout. But then it starts getting into like TV companies and movie companies, and they have the big booths that, you know, you could see Fox from a mile away.
Right.
And if you want to find a hard-to-find action figure, you can't find that shit anymore because they don't have enough booths. You know, and it's depressing for guys like me who used to go there for that shit. And I should say, would you call me a geek?
I think your garage alone earns you the title of geek.
My toy collection?
Yes. Absolutely. You're not going to lose it until you lose that.
But
though I was wondering, you know, because the labels of geek and nerd have been commoditized and rendered somewhat meaningless, I'm wondering how far one has to go to be what we would classify, at least back in the day, as a geek or nerd now.
Well, I guess that was kind of my question for doing this whole thing.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, you come into my house, you see all that stuff, and this is nothing I do other than the fact that I love it. You go in my garage, I have about 1,000 unopened action figures that are displayed much like a toy store. When I turned 18 in 1996, before all this shit happened, I went out, I got my first tattoo, and it was Spider-Man. This is shit that has just always fucking appealed to me. I grew up with Mickey Mouse posters on my wall. You know what I mean? I just like this shit. And now I'm at a point where I'm a 35-year-old man, and my house looks like it's decorated by a child to a certain extent, even though my wife makes it look very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I still don't feel like I can keep up any cred these days. And is that just fucking ridiculous, or is it just me? Do I even have enough cred these days?
Who are you trying to impress, first of all?
Not trying to impress anybody, but, like, here's the thing. With Spider-Man and everything, kind of these films that have come out that are taking over Comic-Con, I feel like now, I feel like a lot of people, I'm embittered by it to a certain extent. And I don't want to do the hipster thing, which, by the way, maybe a byproduct of this whole thing.
Yeah.
But I was the guy that was doing it when I liked it before. And now everybody's coming and wants a piece of my pie and has pushed all our stuff to the corner. And, you know, luckily I like movies. If I was just a comic book guy, Comic-Con would drive me crazy. I love films, so I still really enjoy it. But I don't like that. You know, I like that eccentric quality about me that I like to collect action figures when I'm 35.
You feel like you're losing a piece of your identity because everyone else is sharing it, kind of? Is that it?
Not that I'm losing it, that other people are taking a piece of it.
Well,
like, do you know how hard it used to be to get a Star Wars t-shirt?
Probably not.
I can go to well,
maybe choose something else.
Okay, pre-internet.
Yeah.
To go get a quality Star Wars t-shirt, now I can go to Target and buy 5.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's all of it, though. It's not just a Star Wars thing. the explosion of, you know, you've got Snorg Tees, you got 18 different t-shirt companies selling 500 different designs all aimed towards the geek, comic, nerd, culture, whatever it is. I mean, I know a bunch of people that love the Facebook page. I fucking love science, and that's not considered geeky at all. Now it's like, cool. I don't know what it means, or what... It's like, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to try and just delve further to maintain this cred?
No, not at all. And I'm not all about the cred. It was never about the cred. See, that was the thing that drives me crazy. When we did this, it wasn't about cred. If anything, it was the anti of that. It was punk rock to a certain extent. Or it was very nerdy and geeky, however you would like portray that. I don't like that. Yeah, it's fucking cool to like science. Bill Nye tried to teach us that forever, but now everybody loves I Love Fucking Science on Facebook. That's kind of fucking annoying. Because you know there's eight umpteen fucking hipsters in there that are doing it to be a thing, and that drives me crazy because it diminishes what I do. And I do it for the fandom and for the love of it, and I'm the guy that did it when nobody wanted to do it, and now you're coming and you're butting me out, and that annoys the shit out of me.
So basically you are saying 100% that you're a hipster.
Fuck, it feels like it, doesn't it?
It really does.
Well, define what a hipster is. I feel like a hipster is a byproduct. I feel like the hipster is the guy now that buys the retro Spider-Man shirt and says, I loved it when, because he bought one on a trip when he was eight.
We could probably do a whole separate podcast about what it means to be a hipster, but I think where it really started was the hipster was the guy that said, I listened to Arcade Fire before any of you people had even heard of them. Or I watched, God, I don't even know what, Mystery Science Theater before any of you had watched it or liked it. Or The Room, or, you know, there's countless examples of things that were underground or that were later embraced by the mainstream. And the hipster is the guy that says, I was there first. And
okay.
And I don't like it anymore now that you like it, basically. So yeah, that's pretty much what I'm hearing from you.
And that drives you crazy because you're one of these guys that believes nobody ever did it first, right?
Right. There's no original thought. There's no original, like... There's always somebody that did it before you. And, I mean, that's kind of what I was going to say to you, which is, what did you enjoy about it? Reading the comics? Did you enjoy reading the comics? I know you enjoy collecting the toys, though I really don't understand what kind of tangible joy you get from that, aside from being a hoarder, but that's...
I can explain that, actually.
Okay, go ahead.
I can really explain that. Let me answer the question first. Comic books... For me, it was always the artwork first, story second.
Okay.
Because, like I said, I grew up wanting to be cartoonist. I actually used those to learn how to draw. If those of you guys that don't know me, I'm actually a pretty good artist. I learned how to draw the human figure by tracing Spider-Man when I was nine.
Well, guess what? Now there's even more comics and more artists out there, so more for you to appreciate. How's that a bad thing?
Well, that's the catch-22. It's like you finally come to a world where... Everything you want is at your fingertips. I was watching The Avengers again the other day going, holy shit, this exists in my life. This is a thing. And not only is it a thing...
It was the thing I always wanted, and now I've gotten it, and I'm still not happy.
Yeah, no, but I am. I just... I don't like the air around it. I don't like... Maybe it's not that I did it first, because that's arrogant. Spider-Man was around long before me, and although I identified with him and Batman and... made them a part of my life. I was never the first to do it.
No.
I'm certainly not the most...
Biggest, you know, super fan, kind of.
I'm not even going to claim to be. But what I will say is that when it wasn't cool, I fucking stood up for it. So maybe that's part of it? Is that tangible?
That's I want to say that's the hipster thing, but that's not quite the hipster thing. I think that could, yeah, I get what you're saying. That, and that has less to do even with what it is you're talking about. It could be anything. It could be collecting, you know, those plates that they sell on TV.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that I think it speaks more to your personality and what you are desiring to present yourself as, almost. You want to be the guy that... I guess, like you were saying, is more into the punk rock stuff, more into the underground stuff, more into the exclusive thing, the cool thing, or maybe the not so cool thing that ends up being a cool thing. I don't know. Would you agree with that?
You know, maybe. I don't know. To me, it always felt a little punk rock to not give a fuck what anybody thought. I just feel like, fuck you. I did it when it's cool. See, the other thing with the hipster thing is, is it the whole thing about the hipsters that, yeah, they say they were the first, but they didn't? They weren't? Isn't that the whole fucking point? So what about when you are?
No, that's these days. That's the distortion of the hipster label, and now it's become more of a... The hipster is the now trendy person, the person that the bandwagon jumper, and it all lends itself towards the more, you know, organic or alternative scene. But I'm pretty sure when it originated, it was the I'd been there first guy.
Okay. Well, fuck, it feels like that. No, I won't say it's an exclusive thing, because if anything, we always wanted this. We always wanted to share this world. There was a unique bond that you could form with someone when you found out that they like comics too, and you could talk about that when other people weren't talking about
that. Well, that's part of it, though. You want to be the guy that's in the know when other people aren't. You want to – maybe it's more than being an exclusive, tangible thing. It's having the exclusive knowledge and being the guy that knows shit.
No, I don't mean it like that, because like I just said, I like – going to the guy that knows shit and talking about it with him and learning from him and it being something that we're interested in and sharing that experience. I don't – maybe that's part of it too. I don't feel like anyone's sharing that experience. I feel like it's almost too commercialized. Like I don't feel like anybody's enjoying it. Nobody's talking about it. Nobody has any background. It's sad on me too, because partially we're getting older now, so like – the Batman that a lot of these kids know is the Christian Bale one. They're not, you know, we grew up with the Michael Keaton. You know, the first Superman was Christopher Reeves.
Yeah, that's a whole nother topic, though.
Yeah, I know. It's like the episodes and stuff.
The first
Wars.
Batman was Adam West, dude. That's where it was at. Us kids.
It was.
Us kids didn't know.
Well, and are kids stupid? Because I didn't grow up in the fucking 60s, but I still know that Adam West was the first Batman.
Well, the further away you get away from it. Let's go back to your toys.
Okay, what about them?
You were just going to give me the reason why, the joy that you get out of them.
The joy I get out of my toys. Okay. Star Wars was influential on my life, to say the least. And I couldn't play with all toys growing up because I grew up in a somewhat religious house. So a very big toy, something you mentioned when I was growing up, was G.I. Joe. And I wasn't allowed to play with G.I. Joe. Army, guns, not allowed to play with it. I was, however, allowed to play with lasers and Star Wars characters.
Hypocrisy.
Yeah. So my parents would buy me a lot of Star Wars toys, and I had a lot. I was the kid that had them all. I had Ewok Village, Millennium Falcon, you name it, AT-AT, all that shit. And there was something very cool about it. And when I got to be 18, I moved out because I didn't get along with my family or my father very great. And I needed money. So I went to a comic book store. And I sold all my loose figures, dinged up, scratched up, no guns, missing part of their clothes. I was getting like $10 a figure for them, for the vintage. And this is circa 97, 96. Couple years later, I went to a store in the Westminster Mall in Westminster, California. And it was called Yesterday's, Today's, and Tomorrow or something like that, or Past, Present, and Future or something like that. And it was essentially the store in the mall that was like a bunch of little antique shops in one store. And I walked through there, and I remember I came across in a cabinet in one of the, like, antique little kiosk things they had. There was a couple of Dukes of Hazzard action figures still in the package. And I remember they were, like, $177 each. And I remember that blowing me away. But, like, the thing that blew me away more than what they cost was the fact that I remember passing those as a toy as a kid in the toy store and going – thinking about buying them or wanting to ask my mom if I could buy them or something like that, and thinking that I could have played with those, and somehow that someone had managed to keep those in the box for so many years. And then within that same store, they had a Star Wars place where he had had five vintage figures that were still in the package. And it took me back to this wonderful place where my mom used to take me to, like, Sears and buy me these $2.50 action figures, $2.77, whatever they would cost. And I would take them out and play with them. And I remember playing with them, and there they were still in the package. And to me, the weird thing for me has always been that inside that package is that material and that air from my youth. literally, the 1980s is still inside that fucking package. And I feel like that sometimes. Not only does it feel like when I can buy a figure, I can capture like a little moment in time, but I can also bring a little piece of the film home with me. And I get joy out of that. I'll come into my garage sometimes and just look at the characters and think of all the times I've had with movies, because, you know, guys like you and I, movies are very emotional experience, or can be, on many different levels, whether it be humor or, you know, whatever it is. I like to be able to maintain a piece of that with me, and it allows me to do that.
It's a little creepy, dude.
Is it?
Do you drive around and with a shovel and look for time capsules so you can open them up and I smell the 60s.
It's literally like that.
This one's from the 80s. Oh, it's so good.
It's a cinematic time capsule. That's exactly what it is. And what's wrong with that?
You use air as a drug to transport you back in time. Except you never open them, so you never really actually experience it. You're just torturing yourself.
You know what? And maybe someday I will. Maybe someday I'll be diagnosed with cancer. I'll be laying on my deathbed, and I'll say, bring me that vintage Darth Vader that I have. And I'll open it with my kids, and I'll smell that air, and it'll take me someplace. I don't give a shit. That is my thing.
Hey, whatever floats your boat, right?
Well, what is your thing? What do you get out of your CDs?
It's going to sound really terrible, and it's really kind of against my personality. I don't know where it came. I think it came from college. I think what I get out of them is... Well, first of all, I do really enjoy the music. I don't just buy them for the hell of it. You have 7 copies of one action figure from the Hulk or something like that.
That's not true.
Like a shitty movie. You have 5 copies of whatever. Anyway, so I really do genuinely enjoy it. But I'm always thinking to myself, or maybe shaping my music taste around this thought that I am going to have this party and everyone's going to enjoy and notice the eclectic nature and vast volume of the collection. And of course, it'll never happen. It's all in my head.
You're doing the same fucking thing I do with toys. See, this is what I hate. I'm the drunk, loud one, and you're the eloquent one. So you always say things that sound very smart.
Do I?
Really, you're just as big an asshole as me. This is what I've discovered. Because essentially, I cannot eloquently say what you do is exactly what I do with my toys.
I don't think it is.
There's a pride in them.
No, I don't know. That's only a part of it. I really don't think I'm a hoarder. I want to maybe create a scenario where I don't have to listen to the radio because the radio sucks.
True.
And to be honest, my music buying has dropped off the same way my DVD/Blu-ray buying has, just because of the nature of digital media and my unwillingness to waste money. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know how much that really plays into all of what we're talking about here, but I don't know. I guess, what joy do I... I don't know if I get much joy out of them. They're all in an office that I never go into anymore. So it's not like I go and stare at my CD collection.
See, and I will. I'll go out and just stare at my toys. And I should say, I don't collect everything. I don't have the shitty... I have some shitty movie line action figures, but like part of that is the nostalgia factor too. Like I bought the Nicolas Cage Ghost Rider action figure.
Of course.
And sometimes I like to go out there and look at him and think that was a silly movie that happened at this time in my life, and it takes me back. It's almost like a little scrapbook.
But isn't there a part of you that thinks that your toy collection now is just some kind of substitute drug and that you do it to satisfy it? Do you really get that much joy when you buy each one of them? What I mean is, it seems like an obligation for you. I feel like you are compelled to buy them.
You're not wrong. I'll say that. And yes, there are ones I just recently bought a couple of Aliens action figures that were Hudson and Hicks from the original Aliens, one of my favorite movies, a couple of my favorite characters. Those I took great pride in buying. I have bought figures that I bought just to have in the collection because I thought they were interesting, but they don't bring me a ton of joy. They might have been in clearance or whatever. Like, I bought the Will Smith MIB3 figure. I liked the movie. I didn't need the figure. I thought it would be cool to have one Agent J or K or whatever the fuck he is.
Like, if I were a toy manufacturer, God, I would love people like you. And you remind me of, I was talking to Joe Giuliano of Two Dude Review a while back, and he is a Jaws super fan. He has like 6 versions of Jaws on DVD, and he says every time a new one comes out, he buys it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand that at all. And see, with the music, I have no compulsion to buy anything. I just try to listen to a lot of new music, and if I like something, I'll buy it. And I want to have the CD because I don't trust digital media, and you know, there's going to be the great EMP that wipes out everybody's computers, and I don't want to lose 700 CDs.
So, true.
So I still my physical stuff, but that need to, or that it makes me feel like you guys are such easy marks, and I would love to sell shit to you because you are going to do it every time, no matter how much. I mean, like George Lucas. That's the exact reason myself and so many other people.
Yeah, I'm already saving for Star Wars 7
because I said to myself a while back, I'm not going to give this dude any more fucking money.
True, you know, I have bought the same figure in 5 different packagings.
Yeah, and how many different versions of the films?
I don't. I have the original VHS and the new ones on DVD. That's
I'm sure there are people out there that have.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
7 different. You know, I have it on Laserdisc. I have it on VHS still. I have it on Blu-ray and blah blah blah. And I have the special edition. No, I'm not doing that fucking shit.
Well, I can see it with some things. I mean, if you loved Apocalypse Now, I'd probably buy Apocalypse Now Redux. I've heard certain director cuts of movies are better than the theatrical. That shit does happen.
That's a whole other discussion for us, though, actually.
There's 15 versions of T2 that you don't fucking need.
Right.
Because it's still just T2. Me, yes, at some point it became a compulsion, and I had to limit it. So I have now gotten to a point where, A, has to be a movie character or a Green Bay Packer player, has to be a movie that I like, has to have a toy line that looks nice.
Be honest. So, was that need to limit it based solely on finances? Or was it something you actually recognized that you needed to stop? Just
no,
outside
it,
of that.
Wasn't a problem, if that's what you're getting at. That's what I feel like you're insinuating.
I am,
it's not
kind
that.
Of.
No, it didn't feel like a problem to me. I would love this collection to be twice as big as it was, even with some lesser fare than what I have. But I've decided that like I don't need to own everything.
Okay.
Recently, Iron Man 3 came out. Didn't love the movie. Still, as a completist, because I will buy – if I decide to buy a line, I do try to buy a whole – at least the whole series of whichever I bought. Like recently, Man of Steel came out. I bought the first series. They put out a second series. I have not bought the second series.
Jeez.
But I like the line of toys. I was excited about the film. I haven't seen the film yet, but it's Superman. That's a bad example. But I'm not going to overindulge in it.
Five, ten years down the road, you're still going to be doing it?
Absolutely.
Think so?
I'll do it till the day I die.
Okay.
Yeah. Iron Man 3 was another one. I didn't buy any Iron Man 3 toys. I didn't like the line. They weren't exclusive to they didn't put out figures that said anything about the movie. They were just generic Marvel Iron Man figures that had the Iron Man 3 movie series packaging. The Avengers, I went out and I bought every movie series character they had. This has become less about geek culture and more about my
fucking infatuation. That's fine. And in fact, I wanted to say, I don't want to jump the gun on you, but my takeaway from all of this, because we do our takeaways every episode, my takeaway, you have nothing to worry about with your geek status. Now, whether or not you still get joy outside of the toy aspect of it, you know, and from going to Comic-Con or not going to Comic-Con or just the general culture that surrounds it all, I don't know if we've solved that today for you or for anybody else. You know, you have nothing to worry about in terms of being looked at as a geek.
Yay. Do I win? I still feel like I come out of this being a fucking geek.
You're a geek.
Okay, well, that's a good thing then, I guess.
Isn't that what you wanted? As long as you have a fucking garage full of toys, you're going to be a geek. Because, you know, a billion people could go to Comic-Con, there's not more than 1% of them that's going to have a garage full of toys. And it's probably less than that.
I'm the guy that has the garage full of toys that makes other toy collectors go damn. Like we have a mutual friend, Chris Tansky, that goes by Tank. If you ever listen to MILFcast, he's on there from time to time. He's a toy collector, and he sent me pictures of his room, and it's very impressive. A lot of open toys. I don't agree with that. You don't open your toys. Posters, paraphernalia, whatever. He's got like a basement, my dream. Oh God, I wish we had basements in California. But I showed him a few pictures of mine, and he literally went, damn. Like, I'm that dude. I guess where part of it comes in is because I am so obsessed with this superhero culture and all that stuff, but I don't read comics regularly anymore. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about an obsession. You have to be obsessed. I don't even understand how the new universes work. Like, back in the day, you could pick up Spider-Man and start reading or go back a few issues and figure out what was going on. You can't do that anymore.
Right.
And it's, I mean, they're putting out multi-books every week. They're upwards of $5 a piece. Not only is it expensive, it's confusing. So
that just reminds me of niche culture, you know, with as you see it with TV and as you see it with pretty much everything else that the internet has, you know, kind of exploded, where one person can no longer even attempt to be up to date on quote-unquote everything in pop culture, whereas in the 50s, how difficult would that have been?
No, because you had three channels.
Right. You had three channels, and you had the radio, and what else? You had some movies, but not nearly the volume that we have these days. And
no, they probably ran 15 weeks at a time.
Everybody's got their thing, and you pick your thing, and you get your joy out of that thing, and if you attempt to, you know all of it, so to speak, you're just going to drive yourself batty.
Yeah, I agree. It's just a shame because I feel like I should be enjoying it more.
I don't know what this feels a lot just like Comic-Con, and I don't know what to tell you about that. Go to smaller conventions.
Well, I will, and I should tell everyone that's listening, Stan Lee started a convention last year called Kamikaze, which is taking place in L.A. It's supposed to be the new thing. I was hoping to go this year, but my best friend's getting married, so I'm not going to be able to go to year three. But if you need to go to a con, check that out. It's in November at the Los Angeles Convention Center. It seems like the place to be going forward.
The fact of the matter is, probably anything with con in the title or in theory is going to be ruined for you. Because I imagine they all want to be Comic-Con. It's all about money, and
none of them are.
However noble they might start, that's what they want to be. And it reminds me of like film festivals. You know, Cannes been around forever, but then
Sundance
came around, and you know, everyone wants to be South by Southwest now, and everyone just wants to be the new hot one. So,
well, Sundance is a prime example of what happened at Comic-Con, which is it was supposed to be for the artists, for the little guy. And now there's a question as to what is independent, what is, you know, the studios have moved in, the stars have moved in. It's not what it was at one time.
If you want to get the enjoyment out of it, you got to do kind of what we did with blogging and talking about movies. Make it really small and make it find the people online that are as passionate about it as you are and meet up with them virtually or in real life and talk about it that way.
Well, and that's the funny thing, too, because I feel like maybe even when we started, having a movie blog was geeky.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it is anymore. If anything, it's commonplace.
Well, I think that cycle's already come and gone of it being geeky, and then it wasn't, and now it kind of is, but it just mutated it into something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people don't have blogs anymore. They have websites, or they have Tumblr, or they just have Twitter, or whatever. But yeah, the what you're saying in theory is correct. I agree.
Okay. Well,
what's your takeaway, Kai?
My takeaway is that Comic-Con made hipsters.
And you're the biggest one?
Apparently. God damn it. All right, people, you know what? This is supposed to be about geek culture. But you know what? Dylan and I wanted something where we could go off on tangents and just have nice conversations. And I feel like that's what this was, Dylan.
Absolutely.
And a little bit of therapy for me. So we'll try to get more on track for next week. Anyway, it has been good. We'll see you for episode 4. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.